Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in. I am joined by Emmy, the wonderful communication specialist, and Elizabeth, the fabulous adult collections librarian. How are you both doing today?
So far, so good.
Good.
You're on your third cup of coffee, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Okay.
That is pretty good right now. It's just sustained on coffee.
Love it. So we're doing the Hangouts recording again, so the audio is probably going to sound a little bit different, but thank you for being patient with us. We still want to be able to get episodes out to you, so we're doing what we can. Today, some of you may be familiar with the program we offer called Armchair Traveler, where we have people give a talk about their travels at the library. I decided that, especially now with the quarantine and the travel restrictions, that we should offer a version of that program and call it the Podcast Traveler. So now, from the comfort of your home, you can still experience a travel program. And I thought, who better to regale us with her travels than Elizabeth, who I would describe as Mesa County Library's travel extraordinaire. Today, she's going to tell us about her trip last December to the beautiful and historically rich country of Colombia. Do you think that's a fair assessment, Elizabeth, that you are Mesa County Library's travel extraordinaire?
Yes. Work to travel. It's rare I don't have a travel vacation plan coming up. So this is one of the few times I do not, mainly because I don't know when or where I'll be able to go. So
I was going to say, every time you come in, you're like, oh, I want to go to this place now. I want to go to this place now. So I'm sure that this is a little bit difficult for you not to have somewhere planned to go.
Yes, but it does mean I get to save up money for a nice big trip next year, hopefully.
So you're an avid traveler. How did you discover your love of traveling?
I would say it was probably instilled in me as a child. My family a lot. Like, it's just not me. My whole family does it. The first time I went international, I was 2. And we went to England. The summer I turned 11, my family took 5 months and traveled the entire United States and parts of Canada with a van and a trailer. Traveling has always just been there for me. It's what you do.
It's what you do. You were also homeschooled, which I'm sure helped in allowing you to have some time to travel because you could do schoolwork from the road as well.
Yes. When we did months around the U.S., that was the year we did U.S. history, early U.S. history, so like Civil War, Revolutionary War, and we learned all about that stuff at the actual sites.
That's a cool way. That's awesome. Much different than mine. I've never traveled internationally and have only really been to the Western states, so I was in the airport in New York, if that counts. But that's about it. So I was really excited when you said that you were on board to do this episode because I want to learn more about different countries and just traveling in general. The trips you go on are less of a vacation and more of an experience. So how does traveling differ when you're experiencing the country rather than just vacationing in it?
That's a good question. I think it has a lot to do, at least for my mindset. So if I'm thinking about a vacation, I'm going to relax. It's kind of inside my comfort zone. I don't want to say familiar because I'm usually in a new place, but it's, you know, low key, low paced. A lot of just sitting and reading in coffee shops. Whereas, like, if I'm experiencing a new place, I'm usually pushing myself and pushing my boundaries, pushing what I've experienced. People, a lot of times I go on trips in groups where I don't know anyone. And so, you know, I have to meet new people, which as an introverted librarian, sometimes difficult.
I commend you for that. I would not do that.
Yeah, and like my last few trips have really been pushing myself physically. I've had to kind of just go past what I'm comfortable doing and just push myself and learn. And yeah, that for me, that's kind of the difference between if I'm planning a vacation versus like an experience trip.
So I know for some of the trips that you've done, and as you kind of alluded to, there was quite a bit of hiking involved. So how did you prepare yourself for that?
Luckily, in living in Colorado, it's very easy to train for hiking. you just go hike like every weekend. Do a lot of the stair climber machine. I hate that thing, but it is best friend if you're going on a very long hike. Like I said, I'm lucky. If I know there's going to be a lot of elevation gain, I do stuff like Mount Garfield or go climb 14ers or stuff like that to try to get myself acclimated.
And that was the, forgive me if I'm wrong here, but was that the main way that you guys traveled in Colombia, was through hiking?
There was a lot of hiking. we spent 4 days. The highlight of the trip was, the main part of doing the trip I did was to go to the Lost City, which is ruins in Colombia, in the Sierra Nevadas in Colombia, that predate Machu Picchu. And they're not popular, but it is a 29-mile round trip through the mountains hike. So, like, those were, that big section was a lot of hiking. But even, like, our very last day, we had a cooled out, like, a relaxing day at the beach, right? But you had to walk 3.5 miles into the beach and then 3.5 miles out from the beach. So a relaxing day was a 7-mile walk plus swimming and stuff. So yeah, there was a lot of hiking, a lot of walking.
So what you're saying is this 7-mile walk you went on this weekend was nothing.
Yep.
I commend you for that. I definitely went on like a 2-mile walk yesterday and was so tired afterwards. So why did you choose to go to Colombia? Were you particularly interested in an aspect of it?
Actually, this was one of the first countries I've gone to where I wasn't super interested in the country beforehand. I went with REI and their travel adventure company, and I had gone with them the year before to Peru. As you know, you've seen the pictures.
I have, yes.
And it just kind of popped up, targeted ads on Facebook. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Well, it popped up, and I loved the idea of hiking to ruins and just kind of seeing the archaeological. I really enjoyed it in Peru when I did that to Machu Picchu. And so I was just like, I know nothing about Colombia. Let's do it. Let's just try something I don't know anything about, which for me is very much outside of my boundaries and outside of my comfort zone, because I love information and learning beforehand to be prepared. So,
so unlike your other trips, you didn't do a lot of research beforehand then?
Not before booking. And then as a librarian, you have to research that. There was only a couple months between booking and going for me. It was I wasn't expecting to do it, spur of the moment. If you can count 2 months as spur of the moment.
I think you can. I typically plan my trips to go a state over like 6 months in advance. So... after you did all that research, was there anything that you were particularly excited about when going? Something that you read that was like, oh, this is why I'm going to Colombia.
I was kind of choosy. If I had to do it again, I would probably redo this. But I stayed away from anything regarding the drug wars, the drug trafficking, because I didn't want to be scared when I went there.
Good planning though.
Good idea. Yeah.
But that meant that we visited a lot of places that, that was a very historical part. We took a boat by one of Pablo Escobar's houses.
Nice.
And then when they finally able to arrest him. But because I stayed away from that, I was like, I guess this is interesting. I came back and read a lot. I was like, oh, that's where I was.
As unfortunate as it is, I think it does hold a large part of their history, the drug war. So I'm sure it was interesting to learn about afterwards. I definitely probably wouldn't have read about it before. I did watch a video on Colombia that talked about Pablo Escobar and how he introduced hippos into the ecosystem. And now there are wild hippos roaming around in Colombia. And I thought that was equal parts terrifying and fascinating.
Okay, small tangent. Well, it's related, but hear me out. my husband and I, during quarantine, have been watching movies that we have never seen before, which is hard because Aaron's seen, like, every movie in the world. And last night, we decided to watch Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. And it takes place in Colombia. And the whole premise is this romance novel author, her sister is kidnapped and she has to go save her. But I was reading trivia about it last night because that's what I do when I watch movies. And they were talking about how, like, life imitates art. And they were originally set to film in Colombia, but because the kidnapping of Americans was so high, they decided to film in Mexico instead. And then now I'm on a podcast talking about Colombia.
Full circle.
Yeah, that was when I kept telling people I was going to Colombia. One of the first things they would ask me was, are you going to get kidnapped? I was like, I hope not.
Not on my itinerary.
I think that's the benefit also of traveling with an actual travel company, is that, especially for REI, they've been there multiple times, and so they kind of know the lay of the land and also have connections with people there. So I think I at least would be afraid to travel alone anywhere. And so I definitely am interested more in the group traveling aspect that you do, Elizabeth. Did you feel different traveling in a group? Did you feel safer?
Yes, mainly because I don't speak Spanish. The group is nice because you have translators right there, you know. And you can, the guides that we have, I mean, they've been guiding people in Colombia for years and years and years. They're very experienced. They've worked with multiple different companies. And so they're very knowledgeable. So you can just ask any question and they have the answer, or will quickly find out the answer, which is nice. I used to travel a lot on my own. It's just the past couple of years that I've started to do group traveling. And I found that when I'm doing something that's, I would say, hard, like the 28-mile hike.
That's hard, yes.
Doing it in a group, because you kind of bond over that experience of pushing yourself, and you have people who are waiting for you at the end, you know, and it's just kind of nice to have that group camaraderie. Whereas usually if I travel to cities, like when I go to Toronto and stuff, I like to go by myself because I just like to do my own thing and not worry about others people's, you know, we want to go here. I'm like, do we?
That makes sense. So we've talked a lot about the lead up to the trip. Now let's actually talk about being in Colombia. What was the first thing that struck you when you actually got into Colombia?
There's a lot of people. I mean, our first kind of day there was in Medellin, and so we took a tour of Medellin, and they took us all over to, you know, Comuna 13. I don't know if you guys know about Comuna 13. Comuna 13 was where a lot of the fighting happened during the gang wars, and basically anyone who wanted power. Because there's one road that goes into Medellin from through Comuna 13, and so it's a very strategic place. And so that was one of the most violent sections of the city. And now it's known for its street art, and kind of its hip hop scene, and like a bunch of, they really worked on, you know, revitalizing it and changing kind of the culture there from violence to something more creative. And so it was kind of really cool to walk around to see, you know, our guide runs actually kind of a nonprofit there where he works with people and stuff. So he was walking around and shaking hands and everyone knew him. And it was just interesting to see the different way that they live and the way that they handle trauma in terms of like turning to arts and stuff like that.
I feel like you can learn a lot from a country by witnessing their art. I've obviously never been to another country, but I feel like that would give you a good glimpse into the people and the culture there.
Something that really stuck out to me from Medellin, and this is just because I am a librarian, they were telling us about one of the ways they were trying to make the city less violent is they would put in what they called social acupuncture sites into each little comuna. And so one of the things would be there have to be some sort of transit. So like whether a bus or a train or in one section was a gondola that people can use. And then you had to have a library and then like a community center. And if you like pair, if you had at least two of those things and like connected them and made spaces available, free, open for people to do classes and stuff like that, they found. And I thought it was really interesting that libraries were a part of that. That they were like, in order to, you know, build up the community and, you know, build up the city, like libraries were a very big part of that. And I was like, yes, libraries.
I think that just shows how integral libraries are to communities and community growth. What a cool way. And you said it was for acupuncture?
Social acupuncture sites. Yeah.
Was interesting.
Title. There's some theory about it that they made. And when the government came in to try to curb all the violence and stuff, that's the theory that they used for building these sites and places in the community.
I'm definitely going to need to do some research on this. I've never heard about that before.
Neither had I. I was like, that was the point of the tour in the city where I was asking the most questions.
I would be too.
Tell me more about this. How does this work?
How many days did you spend in Colombia?
We spent 4 days on the Lost City trek on the trail. So that's the 29 miles in 4 days.
That's a lot.
It was a lot, yeah. And it's very humid, very, very humid. You basically had taken a shower by lunch and then again by dinner if you're on the sweat. It's was but
not a shower in the typical sense.
We spent a day in Santa Marta and we spent a day at Tayrona National Park, which is technically a part of the Caribbean. Tayrona and Santa Marta are technically a part of the Caribbean based on where they are on the coast. That was really interesting. It was a very kind of different vibe, different culture, different food there than what we saw in other places. Yeah. So it was fun.
Aside from your 29-mile hike, what other activities did you find yourself doing?
Well, like I said, we went to Medellin. We went to the beach at Tayrona National Park. That was our last day, our 7 mile to the beach rest day. We went on a 3 mile bike ride, kind of around this reservoir, and ended up boating. At the end of the bike ride, we got on a boat, and that was the boat that took us by Pablo Escobar's house. And then we got to have lunch kind of on this deserted island rock outcropping thing, go swimming and jump off of rocks and just chill. And then we went to it was this giant volcanic rock called Piedra del Peñol, and that is terrible for anyone who speaks Spanish, I'm sorry. but you climb up this staircase that's 700 steps and it's just zigzagging back and forth. But you get to the top, and that for me was one of those most beautiful views. It's of they filled in all of these valleys with water for this reservoir. And so what you have are all these tiny little islands that are really just tops of mountains, but now they're islands, and it's gorgeous. And you just have this giant panoramic view at the top of the rock, and it was beautiful. Most of the pictures that like you see for like Colombia or stuff like that, if you see one that's very expansive that looks like a bunch of little islands, that's the view from the top of this rock.
That sounds gorgeous. Did you happen to take any pictures of those?
Absolutely. I'll have to ask. They actually sent a professional photographer with us. Mm. His name is AJ Wells.
What?
He was doing shots for marketing, but then he also was doing shots for us.
Nice. When
he wanted a picture or anything, he would take it. So you have my amateur photos, but then I have really nice photos. That was the other exciting part is, I mean, they send one professional photographer, I think, a year on like one trip of theirs, REI does. And so I just happened to be on that one, and it was nice because a lot of times you'd be like, Adam will take the picture. Not Adam, AJ. Adam's on this call. His name, and that's why I'm thinking it.
No, anyway, I'm looking at his Instagram account right now, and AJ's name is Adam. So
there we go. He's very good, very good photographer. So, except for the bike ride, he drove us because we had this big hill at the very beginning of our 3-mile bike ride. None of us made it. We might have been all fit for hiking, but not for riding a bike up this hill. They gave him an electric bike so he could take photographs and stuff. And so he was just going up by us on his electric bike, and we all panting, pushing our bikes up like, oh, I hate you.
I definitely at that moment would have been like, no pictures of me. Like, I'm sweating, panting, pushing a bike up a hill, and be like, do not take a photo of me.
Right. Well, he took off in front of us to get to the top of the hill. So he'd take pictures of us and be like, reach the top, and we all turn the corner, we're all on our bikes. And he's like, come on, guys.
Then I'd be like, people aren't going to want to come on this trip when they see this photo of me pushing this bike up a mountain. No, thank you. Actually, what was your favorite part of the trip aside from seeing the little islands when you climbed to the top of that volcanic rock?
Probably the Lost City. I mean, that was kind of the main part of being there. Really interesting because it's not as popular as other archaeological ruins in South America, and because of stability of the country, they haven't been able to really push tourism to this area until the last few years, because the mountains we were hiking through, most of the people we met in terms of the lodges where we stayed, the people running that, the people running the packs, they all used to be growers for like drug plants and stuff like that. And so tourism was kind of the government's way to give them a different income other than working for the drug lords. And so it was really interesting to talk to them because they're very open about their lifestyle before and what they did. And I learned a lot about processing cocaine that I probably shouldn't need. but now I do. But when you get to the actual ruins, because there hasn't been a lot of tourism there until just recently, you can just climb all over the ruins. There's no, like, you can only stay on this path. Like when I was at Machu Picchu, you know, they have one way, you have to follow the path. There's only so many people that can go in a day. All for preservation reasons. And the Lost City isn't at that point yet. So we actually, because we had our professional photographer, he wanted to get there before anyone else, any of the other groups who were doing the hike on the same timeline as we were. And so we ended up waking up at 4:30 in the morning, grabbing a quick breakfast by like 5:15, I think. We were on the trail. It was dark. We had headlamps The groups were just starting to wake up and were, you know, going ahead. And so we got there a good half hour, 45 minutes before anybody else was there. So it's just our group on these ruins, and we could walk anywhere, we could climb anywhere, we could, you know, take pictures anywhere, and there was no one else around, and it was just really neat, kind of an experience you don't get a lot anymore because of over-tourism. So that, I think, was one of the biggest highlights for me.
Did you get to see the sunrise from the ruins?
The sun was rising, so to get the very last section that you hike to get to the Lost City, you walk along a trail along the river for about 30 minutes, and then you have to kind of cross the river, and it's about knee, at least for me, it was about up to your knees. You have to take off your boots and your socks, and they have a line that you hold as you go across, and it was just to get light while we were doing this. So we were trying to ford this river with our headlamps, you know, with our boots tied, with the shoelaces around our neck, and we're just like sloshing over. So the sun really started rising after we crossed the river, and that's when we hit the 1,200 steps from the river to the beginning of the city. And 1,200 steps is a lot of steps. They're very small, narrow steps, stone steps that you're climbing up for a very long time. So yes, the sun rose. I'm not sure how or when I was going up these steps.
So an interesting fact that I read about Colombia is that it is the third largest exporter of coffee in the world. And as an avid coffee drinker, I know that you had to try the coffee there. So how was it?
Very good. Colombian coffee, we discovered, is very mild compared to other types of coffee. So it's not like a bold taste. It's more of a mild, kind of gentler taste, but it was still delicious. I think the U.S. is very different from a lot, at least in my travels. I found the U.S. is very different in the amount of milk and milk products that we put into our coffee. Whether you're ordering coffee or like or anything, they don't have milk out for you to like put into it. And so like the only Spanish I learned on this trip was how to say coffee with a little bit of milk. So they would put the milk in for us because we're Americans and that's what we drink. But yeah, like on the trek, they would give us coffee. A lot of it's instant, because we discussed this with one of our guides, and he said the majority of Colombians will actually be drinking instant coffee just because it's cheaper, whereas a lot of the beans and the, you know, like high quality coffee, like you said, is being shipped out. They're sending it to other countries.
Interesting. I'm not a fan of black coffee.
Black coffee or nothing.
What was the food like down there? Because I know, and not to throw you under the bus, but Elizabeth is sort of a picky eater.
Sort of?
I was being nice. So I'm interested in hearing what the cuisine was like down there.
A lot of bread, potatoes. They had eggs. The one problem a lot of times in going with a tour group, I mean, we weren't really large. It was only like, I think, 9 of us plus our guides, is that they know that you're American. So they kind of give you American-esque food.
Oh, okay.
So, like for breakfast, a lot of times we would get scrambled eggs and fresh fruit, a lot of fresh fruit. Oh, the fruit was amazing. Fresh pineapples, fresh mango. I don't like mango, but I pretended I did. I actually ate quite a bit. There's a lot of chicken and rice type of things, a lot of different types of meats. So, but it was all, I actually was impressed with how much I actually liked.
I'm impressed too. You also brought back these like little wrapped guava squares that were basically sugar bombs.
Yes.
They were so good.
weren't they? Oh, they're so delicious. They gave it to us on our all of our long hikes or anything, they would give it to us, and it's like you said, a little guava flavored sugar bar, basically, wrapped in a little banana leaf. And because it's sugar, they basically said, whenever you feel tired, just eat this. It's like natural energy. And you're like, well, it's natural energy because it is pure sugar, like natural sugar, but it is sugar. So we ate most of that on the trail. That was kind of our snack for, instead of like giving you energy bars or something, they would give you that. And then what was really interesting was because it was wrapped in a banana leaf, you could just take the banana leaf and throw it to the side. They're like, oh, it's organic. Like, it'll just decay. It's good for the soil. And that was really weird for me. I'm like, you have to put your trash in a trash can. And they're like, no, just throw it. And I'm like, okay. If we did have something like we had brought our own, like granola bar, we can't give it to them without unwrapping it first. They don't understand that plastic isn't like what they use to wrap things in. They would just throw it to the side, not knowing it can't degrade. That was kind of a little like, oh, our culture, like that culture, you know, experience of, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Like that if you always had something organic, you wouldn't know that plastic you have to hold on to.
I like that they're practicing sustainable packaging.
Right? And that's just like the traditional way of doing it, because that's what you did before there was plastic.
So you brought those guava squares to work, and I definitely had like two before my shift started on top of my coffee. And it was a very productive day for me. But then afterwards, after I got home, I was like, oh man, I'm so tired. So just a word of warning, if you do happen to procure some of those from yourself, they give you a lot of energy, but there is a thing as too much.
Yeah, you'll come down afterwards.
Yes, you will. So to close out, Elizabeth, I want to know, once this travel restriction is over, once the pandemic is stable and it's safe for people to travel, what recommendations do you have for people, whether that be traveling out of the country or traveling throughout the United States?
Oh, that's a good question. I think regardless of where you travel, because I think there's just as many good places to travel within the United States. Like I said before, we did that big trip when I was young. So a lot of the places in the United States, I'm like, I've been there, done that type of thing. But just try something out of your comfort zone. Or you can even do like a day trip or something with new people. Because what I found, especially like on the trip to Colombia, is the questions I asked versus the questions other people asked were very different. And a lot of it was based on, you know, our career, what we were doing with our lives, where we were, our past experiences. And so they would ask questions I would never think about asking. And it was really interesting to, you know, hear the answers and realize that just my filter kind of filtered out that part of the experience. But I was able to actually get that part of the experience because I was with people I'd never met, very different people from me. Yeah, so just go outside. I'm actually super excited because I think this whole pandemic is going to shift the world in different ways. I'm kind of interested to go to other countries and see and talk to them about their experience with this, their experience with the whole pandemic and how it's changed their lives. That to me is what I'm excited about after all of this. But in terms of what my tips are, use the library. I don't know if I should say this, but we have at the library a little Spanish travel phrase book. And usually my trips are less than 3 weeks. So I just check it out at the beginning of my trip and I take it with me. And if I need a phrase or something, I have it. And then when I come back, I just return it. And I've done that for some other countries as well. I get them from another library. But that's super nice. I always like to kind of see what other people's tips are. We have some travel books that are online, and so those are nice. You can download them and read them like in the airport and stuff. Something I like to do, and I did was able to do for one book for my Columbia trip, is I love to read fiction from authors of wherever I'm traveling. So famous like Colombian authors like Gabriel Garcia Marquez. You know, and just reading that, because I think you can find out so much about a culture and a country by seeing what type of literature is kind of, you know, considered important to them.
We will definitely link the book that you read before you went. So we'll have a link to our catalog so everyone else who's interested in going to Colombia or just reading a book by an author can see what we have in our catalog regarding that. Is there anything else that you want to end this with?
Take, especially nowadays, like, it took me moving away from Junction and then coming back to really see what we have to offer here in this area. A lot of times people think, oh, I've got to travel to have these grand adventures or to do these, you know, long, epic hikes. And, like, there's a lot of people who come here for vacation. And there's a reason why. Like, there's a lot of times I'm like, I should just do a trip, you know, here. And I do, like, every weekend when I'm not stuck at home, like I am currently. So, yeah, if you can't, like, I know a lot of times traveling international is not feasible for a lot of people, but you can just have so much fun staying right here in Colorado.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for regaling us with your stories and giving us great tips, and also just allowing us to experience a different culture and environment right now as we're all stuck at home. I'm sure people are going to very much appreciate the option to that they have to at least travel with you over the podcast. So we'll definitely have you on again to do this podcast traveler segment, and look forward to talking more about your trips.
Great. Thanks for having me.